Come on, flounder. Can't spend your whole life worrying about your mistakes. You fucked up. You trusted us. Hey, make the best of it. Maybe we can help you.
That's easy for you to say. What am I gonna tell Fred?
I'll tell you what. I'll swear you were doing a great job taking care of his car. But you parked it out back last night. And this morning, it was gone. D-Day takes care of the wreck. We report it to the police. Your brother's insurance company buys him a new car.
Will that work?
Hey, it's got to work better than the truth.
My advice to you is to start drinking heavily. You better...
In average. Congratulations, Kroger. You're at the top of the Delta Pledge class. Mr. Dorfman.
Hello.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son. Mr. Hoover, president of Delta House. 1.6. Four C's and an F. A fine example you set. Daniel Simpson Day has no grade point average. All courses incomplete. Mr. Blutarsky. 0.0.
I believe I threw up in front of Dean Wormer.
Face it, Kent. You threw up on Dean Wormer.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to PMP Network. We are proud to have one of my favorite actors on. You know, as you know, if you've been listening to the show for the past 20 years since it's been on, you know that my favorite movie of all time is Animal House. And we had Tim Matheson on here. We've had some of the folks from the movie. But now we have the guy who I think was the hit in the movie. Is his name is Stephen Furst, and of course he played Flounder. We all know him and love him. In fact, every time I think of having him on the show, all I can say is, boy, is this great! Because that reminds me of Stephen Furst. Stephen, of course, also was featured in the series Saint Elsewhere as Dr. Elliot Axelrod, and has been in tons of different things. We're going to talk to him about some of his career highlights and, again, about my favorite movie, which is Animal House. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. We're going to talk about my career lowlights, too, right?
Well, of course. You know, highs and lows have to be in there. You can't always have good stuff.
No, I know. I know.
But we'll try to de-emphasize the bad and emphasize the good.
Yes, okay.
That's what we like to do. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you so much.
It's amazing to me that Animal House still, I watched it yesterday just to prepare for the interview, and even, it must be my 23rd or 24th time watching that movie, it fits together perfectly like a glove.
You know, it's funny because people don't realize, you know, a lot of people think they just threw us all together and we improv the whole thing. And basically, you know, it's a very well-crafted script that went through a lot of rewrites. And we went up, they brought us up there a week early just to get to know each other. And we did a couple of read-throughs and if anybody wanted to change anything, and nothing was changed. You know, I know I have one ad-lib in the entire movie, and that was just, you know, just a chance, you know, that I just did it and got it in the movie. But
which ad-lib was that?
It's... We were in the black bar, and we decided to get out of there real fast, and Matheson's in the car making out with the girl, and John Landis, the director, said, "Oh, just run out there and say, yeah, let's get out of here. And I this was not planned or anything, and I remember the time period, because I grew up in the South, and there were just different appropriate words as I was growing up to refer to as African Americans. First, there was... You know, the polite word back when I was a kid was colored people.
Right.
Then there was Negroes in the 50s and 60s. And then in the 70s and 80s, it was black. And then, of course, we have now African American.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were running out, I knew the time period was 62. And I just yelled out, "The Negroes stole our dates." And that was the only ad-lib I had in the entire movie, which made it in. You know.
Wow. Yeah, your character was kind of lovable but pitiful.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And Dean Wormer was such a mean guy, and Niedermeyer and all these people. It was a really good versus evil movie.
It really was a great, wonderful cast. You know, a lot of us, it was our first movies. You know, and the rest of us, it was just our second movies. I think Matheson was the big veteran there. He was a kid actor.
Mm-hmm.
But Thomas Hulse had done only one other movie called 9/30/55 with the guy from the Waltons, Richard Thomas.
Right.
And I don't think Bruce McGill, who played D-Day, had done anything. And I know that was my first movie. I was delivering pizzas.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd you get the... did you just go to an audition?
No, I believe it or not, I delivered in Hollywood, and I delivered to a lot of actors and producers and directors and stuff. So in my car, I kept my pictures and resumes and a roll of tape, and I would tape it to the inside top flap of a pizza box. So I delivered a pizza to a guy named Matty Simmons, who absolutely owned National Lampoon.
Right.
And I got an audition.
Isn't that amazing?
And I had 6 auditions over a period of 3 months.
And how soon after that did you stop delivering pizzas?
Well, you know, I got the part, and then it wasn't starting for another month. So I think, so we started, I guess we started in August, or, you know, I don't even remember. No, we started in October. And I was cast in September. But I couldn't quit my job because I needed the money. So here I was still delivering pizzas, knowing that I was going to be starring in a movie at Universal Studios. And nobody would believe me. I said, I'm just doing this temporarily because I'm starring in a movie next month for Universal. And of course, sure. So I delivered up until about 3 days before I left. I took 3 days off to pack.
Wow. How long did that filming take for Animal House?
It only took 6 weeks, which is... relatively extremely fast, you know, for a major studio film. You know, I've worked on films now, you know, the lower budget independents now, everybody tries to shoot in 18 days.
Right.
You know, which is 3 6-day weeks. And it can be done if the movie's not huge.
Yeah.
And sometimes even if the movie is huge, you can do it in 18 days, especially if you have 2 cameras going at all, you know, at once and at all times and stuff.
I just think that the movie's brilliant. I'm not even sure who actually wrote that movie. In a lot,
it was 3 people who wrote it. Two of the people were in the movie. Doug Kenny, who has died since, he played a minor character named Stork.
Oh, I remember Stork.
You know, what you want us to do, you moron.
Yeah.
Moron. He wrote it.
Wow.
Along with a fellow named Chris Miller, who was Stork's counterpart. I can't even remember his name in the movie. And Chris Miller is the actual real-life character of Pinto, which is Thomas Hulse.
Right.
And then the other person is a little-known writer named Harold Ramis.
Okay.
You know, Harold went on to do huge
many things. Yeah.
Yeah,
in fact, he's been on this show, so he's already a success.
Yes,
but that's interesting, though. I mean, I didn't realize that Stork, the guy who played Stork, was one of the writers. I mean, you know, interesting character.
He actually owned. He started Harvard Lampoon. He went to Harvard.
Yeah,
and it started off as Harvard Lampoon. He started that, and then he sold it to a conglomerate, called National Lampoon.
Right.
They made it National Lampoon.
Wow.
But he was a great guy, Doug Kinney. And he also went on to write Caddyshack.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you ever see any of the guys from the cast? I mean, when you see them, is it like a little reunion or no?
You know, it's always fun to see them. We had a 20th reunion, a few years ago. And it was amazing to see some of the people, you know. Some of them look great, you know. I haven't seen Thomas Hulse, you know, in anything. I understand he's changed quite a bit.
Yeah, someone told me that as well. How did Karen Allen look?
Karen Allen, you know, she's one of the people, I've got to know what she eats. Because she looks as young as she did in the movie.
Really?
You know, and it must be the New England air.
I knew it. I knew she was going to look good.
Yes, she lives in Massachusetts.
I know she does, and yes. I've been trying to meet her for years, and it just hasn't worked out.
Oh, she's just wonderful, and I think just a fantastic actress.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised she's not working more than she is.
Well, you know what it's like. I mean, it's when you get older, this is a very youth-oriented business. And myself now as a director, you know, the studios and the TV stations, the leads have got to be in their 20s, you know. So, you know, we might get Karen Allen to do a minor part, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, my gosh, a woman that's close to 50 in a lead? No way. Not unless she's, Meryl Streep.
Wow. You've been directing a lot of stuff. In fact, most of us have seen the stuff that you've directed on TV. Babylon 5 was one of them, I know that.
Right, I directed Babylon 5 and Crusade. But most proud I am of one that's coming out. I directed a film it's a TV movie for the Sci-Fi Channel, a big event movie. And it stars probably the best actor I've ever worked with in my life. His name is John Rhys-Davies. And the name sometimes, people know who it is, but he stars in all three Lord of the Rings, and he was also Harrison Ford's sidekick in two out of the three Indiana Jones movies.
Right, I actually know exactly who he is. Are you talking about Dragonstorm?
Yes, it's called. I never mentioned the picture.
Yeah,
Dragonstorm, and it's going to air, I think, in November. And we shot it in Bulgaria, and it's a total medieval piece, and it's a sci-fi action thriller in medieval times, and it was the hardest shoot I've ever had because it was sub-freezing temperatures, worse than New England, but. It was just magnificent, and I'm just so proud of this film.
Why Bulgaria? Did you have input into that choice?
No, the studio I did it for, they have offices in Burbank and Bulgaria. They kept with the B's, but it's just that their production company's in Bulgaria, their crew's in Bulgaria, and it's so much cheaper to film in Bulgaria. So the movie may have cost, let's say, $3 million, but it looks like a $30 million film.
Right. Yeah. Well, when you're directing a film or a TV show, have you ever had an actor turn around and go, "Oh my God, it's Flounder"?
No, but I've had people that I've worked with come in and audition.
Like, yeah.
One of the worst times was terrible. Was I had Niedermeyer come in and audition for me. And I was thinking, whoa, it's payback time, you know. but it's hard because, especially as a TV director, if I'm not doing an independent film, I really don't have the final say-so. And sometimes, somebody that like Mark Metcalf, who played Niedermeyer, is really a fantastic actor.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that day he didn't have a great reading, but it all depends on that day. And I got to tell you, when I direct TV, by the time you get to me, the director, it's usually about four or five actors, and any one of them could do the part.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I have to pick one, or the producers have to pick one, and it really is nothing, could be hair color, could be 2 inches too tall.
Maybe a chemistry, a feeling that you have, right? Little intuition?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Maybe a little intuition and chemistry you feel or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like anybody could do the part, who's coming in. But you got to pick one person, and you pick the strongest. Even though I know Mark is a fantastic actor, at the time, maybe he was too tall. I don't even remember the reason why we didn't cast him.
Hmm. Now, someone told me you wrote a book. Unfortunately, no one sent me it, but... you have a book called Confessions of a Couch Potato out?
Yeah.
A couch potato.
It's called Confessions of a Couch Potato. Mm. I'm a diabetic, and I was overweight for, I've been overweight for my entire life, and ever since I remember, until I was about 40 years old, where I stepped on a piece of glass and didn't know it, and my foot got infected. And they put me in the hospital, and they're talking about amputating my foot.
Mm.
And here I was worried about... I was 320 pounds. And I was worried about, you know, my lunch, because they brought me my lunch and put me on a diet, and it was just so measly. I couldn't believe how small a portion it was. And I immediately, you know, rang my nurse call button, and she came in, and I asked her what happened to the rest of my lunch. I said, somebody must have gotten to it. She goes, no, that's it. You're on an 800-calorie diabetic diet. I said, you're kidding. So anyway, she left, and about 10 minutes later, I rang the call button again, and she said, well, can I help you? She was getting annoyed, you know. Mm-hmm. I said, I need to make some business calls. Do you have any Yellow Pages? And she brought me the Yellow Pages, and I called out for Chinese takeout food to be delivered. And I told the guy, I said, whatever you do, don't go to the nurse's station. Come right to my bed. Mm-hmm. I'm in 345 bed B, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So English not being his primary language, I see him through the open door in the hallway, you know, going back and forth looking for my room, and I'm trying to call him and be discreet as possible. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he passes my door, and in walks this other nurse. Now, this nurse, I got to tell you, looked like Lou Cabrazzi from The Godfather in a nurse's outfit. And she came in, and she says, Mr. First, did you order this food? And, I, of course, fearing for my life, I just said, no, I didn't. I don't know what's going on. And so about 30 minutes later, she came in to take my blood pressure, this nurse that looked like Luca Brazzi, and she smelled like, you know, fried rice. So I could tell that she had eaten it. But I got on the stick. I lost 12 pounds in the hospital involuntarily, and I came out and said, God, I feel really good. I'm down to, you know, 288, you know. So I decided to go for 15 and then 20, and then it just kind of like, I just automatically changed. After 40 years, I just started to change my lifestyle. And I went down to 175, and I've been at, you know, between 175 and 185 for the last 6 years.
That's a great story. You know, it's interesting because you're living. Really, I mean, people, you were the fat guy.
Yeah, I was.
I mean, you know, like, and, you know, many people like John Candy made a career out of that, and Chris Farley. And unfortunately, look where they ended up.
You just named all the dead people.
I know that. Well, I'm saying that's where you were heading if you didn't do that.
Right. Yeah, I honestly believe I was. And, you know, I'd rather not get the parts as the fat guy and live a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, anyway, so I started to, you know, the American Diabetes Association asked me to do a speech, you know, at this huge convention. So I did that, and I did something different than most of their speakers, or than all of their speakers, is I made a funny speech, because I don't know how to do anything else but do it with humor.
Mm-hmm.
And they approached me to write a book. They said, you were very funny, and you got everybody laughing, but you also educated people at the same time, telling your story. And I said, well, I'm not a writer, you know. I said, I'm a filmmaker. Why don't we make a movie? So a couple years ago, we made a movie called Diabetes for Guys, and it's a really hysterical, funny video. And so that was pretty successful. Then they came back, and they said, now we write the book, because the videotape was great. We want you to write the book. And I said, no. But finally, I relented, and I wrote this book. It's like a companion piece to go with the video.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Confessions of a Couch Potato. And the subtitle is, talking about Animal House, the subtitle is, If I'm So Skinny, Why Do I Still Feel Like Flounder?
Mm.
You know, which is true. I mean, even though I'm, you know, 180 pounds, I still feel like that 320-pound nerd.
Mm.
You know, everybody's staring at me and, you know, I was a closet eater, so I would never eat in public. But now it's so great to have a frozen yogurt and not have to hide the fact that I'm eating a frozen yogurt.
Right.
You know,
it's very, you know, something. It's interesting to note. I mean, I was 218 at one point. Now I'm 180 myself, and I work out every day at the gym. But one of the great pleasures of life is eating, and eating nice foods and fun foods, and some of them are fattening. But you know, you have to have a modicum of control, have smaller portions, and just exercise, and you know, you can eat anything you want to, pretty much.
Well, see, that's the book. That's the thing about the book that I did. I dispelled the fact that you have to deny yourself these things, because basically what I did and what the book's about, besides having tons of stories in the book about being fat and growing up fat and all that kind of stuff, I have recipes in the book on things that I like that I'm not supposed to have, and I've come up with substitutions. And now, I don't say, well, I can have a sliver of cheesecake, because that's never going to work with somebody like me. You give me a little piece of cheesecake, I'm going to eat the whole thing. So I've come up with things that I can eat the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are not going to think they taste very good, but to me, it's a lot of it's psychological. I eat tons and tons of food. I eat just different kinds of food. I make a cheesecake, and I took a Sara Lee, which I loved Sara Lee cheesecake, the frozen cheesecake.
Mm-hmm.
I took the real one, threw that away, and I kept the box. And I put my cheesecake in the Sara Lee box, and I go to the refrigerator and eat the whole thing when I need to. And it's you know, not fattening, because it's a made-up recipe, that which is in the book, and I have movie theater popcorn. I have an entire Thanksgiving meal, which is, of course, everybody's horrible holiday for eating, is Thanksgiving. I have an entire Thanksgiving meal recipes in the book where you can eat and stuff yourself at Thanksgiving and lay on the couch and watch ball games and fall asleep, you know?
Yeah, it's a shame I didn't get a copy of this book in video, but...
Well, you should get it. American Diabetes has them.
Yeah.
The publisher of the book is McGraw-Hill.
Now, you have your own website, too, don't you?
You know, I don't run the website, so I think it's just a fan-based website where you can buy autographed pictures, but I don't get any money from that.
You don't?
No.
Wait. I think it's StephenFirst.com as well. But they sell on that site autographed photos of you.
Right.
You sign the photos?
Yes, I signed.
And you don't get any money for it?
Not that I remember, because I know I'm not getting checks from them, so...
Isn't that weird, huh?
Yeah.
Well, why would you sign them, then, if they ask you for more?
They run the website for free.
Oh, I see. So that's kind of the way they get paid.
Yes.
Oh, I got it. Yes. Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's a nice little website, actually.
Oh, I got to check it out sometime.
Yeah, you really should. Let's go back to my favorite subject, Animal House, again.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about working with John Belushi.
John Belushi was just a wonderful guy. I really can't say bad things about him. Yeah, everybody knows what his problem was, so, I mean, that's not new news to anybody. Was it
a problem during filming and stuff? I mean, was
he? I didn't notice it. No, I've heard. You know, I've read things and documentaries about how he and Landis, the director, came to blows or something like that because he wouldn't come out of his trailer. I was not privy to this at all. I mean, he was on the set all the time, on time when I was there. We laughed, and, you know, he made me laugh off camera, you know, which was, you know, there's only one other person I've worked with that kept me in hysterics as much as John Belushi, and that's Billy Crystal.
Really?
Just funny.
And you've worked with guys like Michael Keaton and Christopher Lloyd, Michael Fox. I would think some of those guys would be pretty funny.
Yeah. No, they're not. You know? Christopher Lloyd is funny because he's Christopher Lloyd. He's nobody else but what we know. What the public knows about Christopher Lloyd is what Christopher Lloyd is like in real life.
That's kind of scary.
It is. He's Jim Ignatowski in real life.
Wow. And Michael Keaton?
Michael Keaton thinks he's Batman. We keep telling him he's not, but no, I'm just joking. No, Michael was very nice, but, you know, he's an actor. He's just a, you know, regular actor, you know. He was very nice.
Now, you work with Michael J. Fox in Midnight Madness?
Yes, that's Michael, before Michael was famous. I was just amazed of how young he looked, because he was 19 when I worked with him, and he was playing a 12-year-old.
Right, well, exactly, and he always has looked young.
And he was just... He's one of the nicest people that I've worked with, you know. I worked with him before he was famous, and then I think I saw him again, like, in the mid-80s when he was, like, super hot after Back to the Future and everything. And I just, you know, went up to him, and, you know, he remembered me, and he just, you know, gave me a big hug. He's just really friendly.
Yeah, that's he's a nice guy. It's,
really
it's unfortunate
nice.
That he's got health problems.
Yes, but he's you know, he you can either, like me, you can either sit down and go, oh, my God, I'm a diabetic, I'm going to die early, and all this kind of stuff, or you can, you know, try to do something, which I think he's doing.
Right, and that's absolutely true, and he's also becoming a real activist for that particular...
Yeah, as I am with diabetes.
Exactly.
Right.
And so that, you have to do that, really. I think it's important.
Yeah.
You know, I love St. Elsewhere, too. That was a great series.
Oh, I love doing it. You know, it took place in Boston, and we went to Boston like once a year for about 5 days and shot some exteriors and stuff like that. But
you ever get to Boston at all anymore?
You know, I have. I shot a film 2 years ago in Massachusetts. We shot in Salisbury Beach, Cambridge, Charlestown, if I'm pronouncing them right. And we shot all around there. And we shot in October, which was, my gosh, it was like heaven on earth.
Hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, if you come down here again, I'll take you out to lunch. Just give me a call.
Are you in Boston?
Yes.
Oh, great.
Astoria's right south, 10 minutes away.
Ah.
Yeah, you don't want to be in Boston, because then you get stuck in all the traffic and you can't drive your car.
Right.
It's like New York or something, or L.A., but,
right,
you know.
And have they finished the big dig yet?
They haven't finished the big dig.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and one day it will be finished, though. Sometime before our lifetime expires, it will be done.
Yeah.
But another series that you were in that I thought was really good quality stuff, and that's one thing that's important there. I'm trying to concentrate on the stuff that you did that was of quality. The day after that miniseries, I really liked that. That was with Jason Robard. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
And John Lithgow was in that, too?
Yes, my scenes were with John Lithgow. And also, gosh, why don't you ask me about somebody who's mean? He's super nice.
So who's mean, then?
Oh, man. Let me think of who's mean.
Give me a mean guy.
Gosh, it's hard. You know, a strange person. Well, I told you Christopher Lloyd was quite strange.
Yeah.
And I did a film with Cloris Leachman. She was quite strange.
Really?
Yeah. And
was she mean, or was she just strange?
She's just very, very bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, like, most people are just really nice, you know?
And they are, yeah.
It's like any business, you know, if you're in the news business, you know, there's always going to be the one or two people that you don't get along with.
Exactly, yeah. In fact, I've met, you know, thousands of celebrities, and there's only a handful that are really not nice.
No, who's not nice? You can't say, can you?
You know, it's interesting. One of them was Justine Bateman. I didn't like her.
Oh, really? I don't know her.
Yeah, she was kind of rude.
Yeah.
And Lisa, what was her name? Rachel McLeish. She was a bodybuilder.
Well, nobody knows her.
Yeah, exactly, and that's good. You know, some of these people like that, but most people are real, real nice. I mean, you know, I had Valerie Harper on the show, and her husband actually invited us out to dinner, my wife and I, and Ed McMahon's done the same when I've been down there.
I know Ed McMahon, where you have the same agent, but he's very nice.
He's a great guy. He's a great guy.
You know what else happens, too, which is very weird? I've seen it happen twice, is you work with somebody who is, you know, not famous, who feels that they should be, and they do become famous, and their whole attitude changes.
Yeah.
You know, they become really nice.
Who's that? Give me an example of that.
Two people that I can think of was, I worked with an actor, Brian Dennehy.
Uh-huh.
I worked with him, and he was just, I was thinking, God, what a grump he is. He was just miserable. I was doing a TV movie with him. And then, you know, about 5 years later, I was in a shopping center, that multi-level shopping center, and I hear, "Hey, Steve," and I look up, and it's Brian Dennehy, like a kid seeing an old high school friend or something.
Huh.
And he was like, he had become famous. He had did Cocoon and stuff.
Right.
And he just, you know, was just so friendly, and he was just such a grump when I worked with him earlier. And then the other person was Denzel Washington.
Really?
You know, Denzel was, you know, he was starting to become famous, but, you know, wasn't at the superstar level he is now. And he was a little testy when he was at that semi-famous stage.
So now when you see him, is it like a little reunion?
Now it's like, you know, he's Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah. You also have branched out into doing, you know, you do voices now, too.
Yeah, I did. Buzz Lightyear in the Star Command. I do Booster. It's so cool to go to Toys R Us, you know, and you see your character.
Booster is you.
Booster,
yeah.
And then I was a Happy Meal at McDonald's a couple years ago. I just thought that was so great. You know, I would stand at McDonald's and listen to what toy the kids would ask for, and when they asked for me, I would, like, give up a big hug to the kid, you know? You know, I almost got arrested doing that. But it was a lot of fun, and then I did a Little Mermaid.
Yeah, Little Mermaid 2 you did, right?
Yeah, Little Mermaid 2. Yeah. I did The Walrus, and that was a fun... I did a duet with the guy who played... He was in Doogie Howser. He played the New York kind of kid.
Oh, yeah.
I forget his name.
Was it Vincent?
Vince, yeah, I think, is that the character's name, right?
Yeah, maybe that was the character's name.
Yeah, Vince Scapelli or something like that. He played this Italian friend of Doogie Howser.
I can't believe I don't remember his name, because he actually had him on my show, and I don't remember his name either. But
yeah, I forgot his name. Mm. But, you know, we did a duet together in that. He was a penguin and I was a walrus. Did that. And I did Jungle Cubs. I played Hathi the elephant in the Jungle Cubs.
Hmm.
So it's so weird, though, because, you know, I went to all this trouble to lose weight and everything, and all the cartoon characters I play are fat. It's so weird. I guess I have just a fat voice or something.
So you've got to get the animation diet now going, too.
Yeah, exactly. The cartoon diet.
Yeah. That's funny. So I know you're doing a lot of stuff with the Diabetes Foundation.
Yes.
What else are you working on? Are you still working on directing some films, movies, TVs?
Yeah. Well, I'm doing another film for Sci-Fi Channel, another TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing a film called The Jester for an independent. It's hopefully a very scary movie that will... Hopefully, 5 years from now, you can interview me, and I say we're doing Jester Part 5.
You know? You want it to be a little dynasty there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that'd be good. I mean, it's wonderful that you're healthy, that you're happy. Are you married or single?
Yes, I'm married, and next June, next month, in a couple weeks, I'll be celebrating my 27th anniversary.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
I just had my 14th. They fly by.
They do.
Yeah. Do you have any children?
I have two older children. Oh my God, I can't remember his name. His name I can remember. His age. He's 24. 24.
Yeah.
And he's very interesting because he was going to school to be for music.
Right.
And he came back to me and he says, "Dad, they're teaching me how to clap in rhythm, and I'm composing music, and they won't let me take any more advanced classes." And I said, "Well, you can always go back to school if you want to just try to make it in Hollywood first."
Uh-huh.
And now my son is, 24 years old, and he's just finished composing the music for a film for Miramax.
That's great.
Yeah.
What's his first name?
His name is Nathan. Nathan First.
Yeah.
And the name of the movie is called Bionicle, which is a huge toy from Lego.
Huh. So that's great. He's got his first job now. And Dad didn't help him, right? He got it himself, right?
Well, Dad gave him his first little movie, but I certainly didn't help him get this Miramax one.
Yeah.
And then my other son's an actor.
And what's his name?
His name is Griff, G-R-I-F-F. And he's been in a couple of my films, and he just did a guest star on Without a Trace.
Ah.
So,
isn't that nice to see the dynasty continues?
Right. It will be like the Barrymores, of course.
Well, you could be the first family
of
acting.
Yes, that's exactly right. The first family of film.
Yeah. That's great. I really, really enjoyed talking to you, Stephen.
Thank you so much.
And I hope we can do it again sometime.
Yes, and I hope to get back to Boston. I just one of my favorite cities.
Well, I hope if you come down that you'll contact us through the website.
Oh, I will. It's great. It'll be wonderful.
And it was a real pleasure talking to you, and good luck with everything. Stay healthy.
All righty.
And get off that couch.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.